Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Out the First for today. It is January the 18th, 2023. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Good to have you here with us. It's been a hectic week. Still trying to figure out kind of my schedule for the weeks now that, you know, golf is back. So it's been kind of weird to try to figure out what point in the day I should do this show. And then if I don't do it at the beginning of the day, I kind of wind up in the spot where I am now at like 3 in the afternoon. It's like, oh, I should do this. And I have to do it. And then, like, well, I don't want to inundate you with something that might be old by the time we get to this. So, apologies, I will get this figured out. In the meantime, we have two stories to talk about, as the name of the show implies. And we are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana. So, let's start with kind of the top story, I guess, the story that's been revealed. And that is that LIV has a television home in the United States, apparently, or at least is very close to it. Maybe they haven't signed it yet. Based on the reporting, it doesn't sound like it's exactly a done deal, but that it's very close to being done, and that is a deal with the CW, and that they would air their events on the CW. There have been multiple reports of that, and a lot of that seems to be based on David Faraday letting the cat out of the bag a little bit during one of his kind of stand-up show performances, his live show performances, talking about the CW network and that it could get him in trouble if he talks about it, and blah, blah, blah. Basically, just probably was okay to say it, but making it sound like, oh, I don't want to get in front of things. And maybe it is not nice to say it because maybe they haven't signed the deal yet. We don't know. There has been this expectation there's going to be a lot of announcements this week from LIV. You would imagine if they're going to announce their roster for the year, they're going to announce their television coverage or streaming coverage or whatever it turns out to be at the same time. So maybe one waits on the other. I don't know. I'm not plugged into LIV Golf and really don't have that much desire to be, but just trying to read the tea leaves here, it does sound like they do have something in the works with the CW. Whether that's exactly a done deal yet is unclear, but the sketch of the deal from the folks at Front Office Sports, which does a good job looking at the business of sports, they said that this is a rev share deal, at least as constructed. It would be a deal where they split the revenue, they split the profits from what happens here. Of course, the big question mark behind splitting the profits is, will there be any? Because LIV is going to fully produce the entire broadcast as they did during their Invitational Series last year. And so that's going to obviously cost them quite a bit of money, but they figured they would be able to make that back on a rights deal. Well, if they're not getting paid rights, that means they're not getting that up front, which means they've got to get it from advertisers and sponsors. And as you know, if you've been paying attention, that LIV doesn't really have sponsors. They have Saudi Arabian companies that have stepped in for the Jeddah event in Saudi Arabia. But other than that, there's not been a sponsor that I have seen yet. And we also know that a number of the business folks on the development side, particularly around sponsorships and the franchise concept that they have left the company, presumably because they haven't been that particularly successful in getting sponsors, getting investors on board. So does that mean they've got a battery of sponsors just waiting, ready to go, that we don't know about? Nope, possible. Absolutely possible. Say it over and over again. Things are possible. Maybe not likely, but possible. And so for this to really work out for LIV, a couple of things have to happen. One, as we've talked about over and over again, they have to find someone who's willing to spend money with them. They have to find companies that are willing to spend money with them in terms of advertising. Not necessarily in terms of franchises, but without the franchise model, I don't think this thing works, because then you're just throwing money at purses, because they're not going to get sponsors to pay for $25 and $50 million purses. They're not doing that. So you're going to have to defray some of the cost with sponsors. You're going to have investors in the franchise concepts, and you're going to have a rights deal. All of those that pays you money up front every year. All of those things are going to happen for this to work. That all said, having a deal on the CW is a big step up in many ways, not in every way, but in many ways, from just streaming on YouTube. That just has to be realistic. A United States television deal is a must-have for a sporting entity, a sporting league. If you do not have that, you might as well not bother. It's very hard to get footing in this country without being on a television in some fashion. Just ask the cornhole people. They're on TV everywhere, and they have picked up tremendously over the years. F1, when it barely aired on the United States, hardly anyone cared. now that ESPN has had it for several years and the Drive to Survive series, we'll come back to the Netflix stuff later, that has been tremendously successful. So for Liv, you need to have a home. They may have one. Now, you may have a home and you may have the potential distribution of something like 100 million homes, but if you look at the primetime ratings for the CW in 2022-2023, the television season, they are bad. They are very, very bad. And total viewers for most of their primetime shows are in the area of 300,000 to 400,000, maybe a 500,000 here and there. But on the average, you're looking between 300,000 and 500,000. That's in primetime. Not on a weekend, not at a time when maybe some of this stuff could actually be preempted, because the CW, yes, has tons and tons of affiliates, but a lot of those affiliates, and I'm speaking from experience having a CW affiliate that does this, they will take a feed from Raycom Jefferson Pilot Sports to air the Atlantic Coast Conference on a Saturday, all day Saturday and Sunday. And then you have that, and then they pretty much air what they want. They don't have to take the CW feed during those sessions because they're affiliates. It's not, we are required to take all of it. So you might not even have access to that full 110 million home supply, depending on the relationship with that particular CW station. That's a concern for sure if you're Liv, but to be able to say that you're on TV and that you're not paying for it, because the Fox deal sounds like it would have been a paid for deal, that's better than nothing, I guess. And that is something, but it's hard, I would think, to go and say, Yahoo, we finally got what we wanted. What they really want is to be on Fox Main, not Fox Sports 1 or Fox Sports 2. They want to be on Fox, and they want to get a rights deal for it. So they're going to have to go through this entire season, again, throwing money at it, hoping that you can find sponsors and investors. And I just don't see that out there in the marketplace. Again, right now, I don't see that. There's no tea leaf that says, hey, here comes Adidas with a big investment of sponsor dollars. Here comes eccentric billionaire who wants to own a piece of a golf franchise for a league that is relatively new. I haven't seen those things yet. That doesn't mean they don't exist. And I will preface every opinion I make. It's based on what I think I know, not everything that's out there, of course. Because there's a lot of stuff that we probably don't know that's going on behind the scenes of Liv. But again, as we've talked about, this offseason, so to speak, since the end of October to now, there just has not been much news. And the only news player movement that I've heard of is Mito Pereira, who sounded like he was going to go at the end of the last PGA Tour season. And the PGA Tour said, hey, why don't you just play the President's Cup? He said, sure. And then figured he would probably move on. And all the signs point to him going to Liv. Okay. But we do have some news regarding players who have been given a waiver or competing event release to go play in the Saudi International. The PGA Tour requires these if you're going to go play on another tour that's not under their umbrella at the same time they have an event. It doesn't matter what tour you're on, whether it's Korn Ferry Champions, PGA Tour, whatever it is, you need a competing event release. So they've granted them to 4 PGA Tour players, and then throw in some Korn Ferry Tour guys. So the 4 PGA Tour players are Cameron Young, Cam Champ, Johnny Vegas, and Lucas Herbert. I know 2 of the 3 Korn Ferry Tour guys off the top of my head, Kiradek Api-Barnrat and Tom Lewis. And then there's 1 third guy, I'm sorry, I forget. But 7 guys kind of under that PGA Tour banner that have been granted a release. We don't know how many applied for it. Eamon Lynch reported on this first for Golf Week, but we don't know the exact number of the people who applied. He didn't, and the PGA Tour wouldn't say. It's suspected to be much lower than previous years when the Saudi International was either on the DP World Tour or last year, its first year, on the Asian Tour. But Cameron Young did say at the end of last season that he was intrigued by the idea of Liv and intrigued by their business model as something potentially great for him, but that it's too early in his career to try to chase that money payment and potentially really sabotage his ability to get into the majors beyond maybe this year, because he doesn't have a PGA Tour win. So he's got to stay in the top 50 in the world or get to the Tour Championship to be able to do those types of things until he wins or wins big, and then maybe you consider that. But I don't know if that necessarily means he's going to go and go over to LIV. This could have been a concession from the PGA Tour saying, hey, thanks for staying. We'll let you play the event, cash in on an appearance fee, and we'll let you do it this one time, and then we'll move on from there. Camp Champ's a really interesting case to me because he has been very notably visible when it comes to civil rights issues. So I'm curious his rationale for choosing to play in this event. Obviously, it's money-driven, but why do it now? And then Lucas Herbert is not necessarily a surprise because he has played in this event basically since it started until 2019, or from 2019. So he's been a regular patron of this event, cashing in, been a top 50 player, continues to cash in. I don't think he's going anywhere, but people want to use this as kind of a proxy for who's going to live and what's going to happen. And I'm sure there are going to be other signings than Mito Pereira. There have to be, but I don't think there's going to be all that many. If Norman said, 90% of the players that they had that were kind of the regulars are coming back, that doesn't leave a whole lot of room for five or six more. And if you got one in Pereira, then you got four or five left, and we haven't heard anything really shocking otherwise. Again, things can change. Things can always change. But that's kind of the state of play right now. All right, let's get to our second story today. I want to dig in a little bit more because there's a great piece in GQ that I believe you should read if you have a chance today or the next couple of days. And that's about the kind of behind-the-scenes nature of the Netflix golf documentary series. And it's really pretty interesting. It's a longer piece, and it kind of looks at how everything came together and how the editing came together and what Netflix wanted and what they didn't want. And kind of the big headline piece of it is, oh, well, Brooks Koepka was really, really sad over the course of filming this program. And so they didn't want to keep him out, but they didn't want to feature him as much as maybe they otherwise would have, or at least Netflix didn't, because he looked upset the entire time. And it sounds like it later in the piece, he kind of talks about, or the author talks about with the folks behind the series, how he maybe starts to open up a little bit and kind of explain why he's upset and why he's sad all the time. And he's having a hard time sleeping at night, and that he's having, he was at a crossroads in his career, I think, in 2022, even without the LIV stuff. But the LIV stuff certainly was a big key for it. And when he did break through for a LIV win, I think that was the Jeddah event, if I remember right, he was very emotional. I've never seen Brooks Koepka get emotional, except in that moment. He got teary-eyed, and yes, it's like, oh, well, you just cashed in a whole boatload of money. Why were you sad? But from a guy who won four major championships and has been dealing with different kinds of injury issues and different kinds of problems on the golf course related to his professional career, that was emotional for him to try to get back into the winner's circle and find something that would indicate to him that he's not through. And he's got a pathway into the majors for the foreseeable future, into, well, at least two of them, because he's won two of them. So he's in the United States Open till the end of the decade, at least. And then he's in the PGA Championship for life. He's got a few more years left if he can stay in the top 50 at the Masters and the Open Championship. So it is a big deal for him. He probably realized that, at least I would like to think, someone like him, knowing what he's accomplished, would consider the long-term ramifications of what he chose to do by going to LIV, in thinking, hey, if the PGA Tour does what they say they're going to do, and we don't get points for the official World Golf Ranking like the OWGR says they're going to do, at least for a while, if not ever, then there's a very realistic possibility that I'm not in all four majors for the rest of my life like I thought I was going to be a few years ago, and just be a mainstay and potentially rack up 6, 8, 10 majors if everything goes right. And oh, by the way, my health has deteriorated, so that makes it even more difficult. So I can understand why there was some emotion there, and I'm sure all of that kind of stuff will come out. I, for one, am curious how much of this will look manufactured, because there's one scene in the kind of preview trailer for the show that looks like it's Ian Poulter. I'm not sure if it is, but it looks like it's Ian Poulter who is like throwing a club at the ground in a locker room, and I'm pretty sure it was him based on some snooping around of Getty Images and the pants that he wore that day. But how much of that is true? How much of that is manufactured? How much of that really came about because there were no cameras around and he would have done this anyway? And how much of it is because, oh, there's a Netflix camera over there. I should get really mad. I should really look upset or really look happy. I don't know. And I think we'll have to kind of judge some of that for ourselves. And of course, the folks behind the series will be like, yeah, it's all genuine. You know, we knew what they were, you know, all those types of things. But I'm not convinced that this is all going to be 100% on the up and up genuine. And it's okay if it's not. It's okay if it's fluffed up a little bit. I think people want to see golfers how they really are, but they're probably willing to acknowledge that they don't know what they really are like. And I'm willing to acknowledge that. So anything even close to that is probably a positive thing. And that's probably where it's going to go with it. But I would highly encourage you to check out the GQ piece if you have some time over the next couple of days. It's probably a 20-30 minute read, depending on how quickly you read. And you could just skim it and get the highlights if you want. But it's a worthwhile look into the docuseries. And like I said, I'm looking forward to watching it. I will be watching it. If it's available for binge watching, I will binge watch it. If it's available episodically, weekly, then that's the way we're going to go with it. Fine, too. But we'll certainly keep a lookout for it. And if there's any other information kind of leading up to it that's interesting, we'll share it as well here on Two of the First. Obviously, that second story is not very long. And there really isn't a whole lot controversially going on the PGA Tour, but I guess there'll be three off the first today, because there is one thing I wanted to point out about the LPGA's Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions. It's their first event of the year, and there's a lot of drama around this event, and I'll try to sum it up in, you know, 5-6 minutes worth of time, but there's two pieces that are kind of dramatic about this week. It's a 29-player field. There are 50 amateurs. There's a celebrity tournament that happens at the same time as the LPGA event. You got to be a winner in one of the last 2 years to qualify. A lot of the top players, a lot of them, you know, 6 of the top 10 basically aren't there. Lydia Ko, who lives at the host course, has a home there, is not playing because she's on her honeymoon. You got Hyuju Kim, you've got Jin Young Ko, you got Minji Lee, Lexi Thompson's not there, she didn't even qualify. Got a bunch of players who are not competing this week. And that's one of the dramatic pieces of it, because Jin Young Ko and Minji Lee have been eligible for this tournament basically since its inception, and they haven't played. And there's a rule on the LPGA that says you have to play an event once every four years, if it's a domestic event on the schedule and you're eligible. So since they chose not to play, they could be fined $25,000 by the LPGA Tour. And that sounds like a lot of money on the LPGA, because $20,000 is a lot to anybody. Kind of more of a drop on the bucket for the PGA Tour. But for the LPGA Tour, $25,000 is not nothing. However, when you think about their predicaments in particular, Minji Lee living in Perth, Australia, and Jin Young Ko being in South Korea, for them to go to this tournament and compete, it's not really economical for them, even with guaranteed money. Think about it this way. Going from Perth, Australia to Orlando, Florida, and then back is something like a 24,000-mile round trip. Beth Ann Nichols did the numbers for a Golf Week piece on this. And then, not exactly the same distance, but similar distance for Jin Young Ko to go back and forth to South Korea to play in this tournament. Jin Young Ko's been dealing with a wrist injury back half of last season, or back portion of last season, and the only thing that she says is going to make it better is rest. So playing is probably not in her best interest. For Minji Lee, she played a bunch in Australia, including the Australian Open, which was played along, the Women's Australian Open was played alongside the Australian Open in December. Really cool festival of golf. We talked about that here. And she's been active. So what's the point for them to come and play in this tournament, with the added caveat that this tournament is the first of the year and the next one is in, what, Thailand? It's in Asia a month from now. So there's incentive to play, yes, because you could win $225,000 if you win this week. But there's disincentive because it's going to cost you a ton of money to fly there. It's going to cost you money to stay there. You obviously got to fly back. It's a long haul. You're going to deal with jet lag. Last place is not going to cover your costs. We're barely May. And you're just going to come back and then wait for 3 more weeks to play what starts the Asian swing on the LPGA. It just makes sense to kind of take the fine. Now, Jin Young Ko did enter the tournament originally, and then she withdrew. So that could be something she could use in appealing this to the LPGA commissioner. Minji Lee didn't do that. but they could also use what's available to them as a one-time exemption, one-time hall pass, basically, to get out of the 1-4 fine. And they may use it here if they have to. They could do that. But this is an interesting discussion because this tournament kind of sits on its own. And then you have multiple weeks until you go to the Asian swing that starts. And even when you had a tournament immediately after, which they don't now, they used to have the Game Bridge, but now the Game Bridge is merged to become the Annika with the Pelican. So you've got this one tournament and then a month and then another tournament. You've got to put this tournament in a position. Yeah, you want it to start the year, but you have to give players a reason to come over from Asia, from Australia and New Zealand, if they're living there, to come to this tournament and play if they're eligible for more than 1 week, at least 2 weeks. And with the money that's available now in the LPGA, this is one of the lowest purses. If this is the lowest purse, tied for the lowest purse on the LPGA this year. Either you increase the purse, you find a way to get it over 2 million, 2.5 million, somewhere in that range, and you get more players, better players, fuller field, or you kind of accept it for what it is and realize that you're in a world now where the 1-4 rule is more important than ever because you have tournaments with 8, 9, 10, $11 million purses and a $2 million first place prize for the CME Group Tour Championship. Players can be a lot more selective. So you're going to need this 1-4 rule to work in your favor until you can bring up those purses on the 1.5, sub $2 million events, up above closer to $2.5 and $3 million, because that's really what's available to the top players now, and they know it, and they're going to take advantage of it. The other thing to think about that came up, and Beth Ann Nichols, I think, wrote about this last night. She's been on, obviously, on the beat. She's the best at this for the LPGA. But they didn't have a locker room, a permanent locker room, at Lake Nona this week for the women. They didn't have one because they had the men's locker room that they needed for the male celebrities that are competing. But the women's locker room apparently didn't have like lockers or enough lockers or something. So they had to bring in, first of all, the players probably came to Beth Ann and were like, "Can you write about this?" And she said yes, because that's ridiculous. And then apparently they're bringing in like 3 dozen lockers and they're going to put them in a temporary locker room and the LPGA players will be able to access them. And then some of the celebrities, I guess the female celebrities playing will be able to as well. That blows my mind that in the year of our Lord 2023, that is not one of the first things that comes about when you're working on a tournament setup. Purse, sponsor, players, locker room, facilities, like range, locker room. The LPGA does such a great job with amenities for what they have access to between getting physios and having childcare and all that stuff, but locker room's a big miss. I mean, that's one of those that you got to have right then and there. And if the club says, "Hey, we can't accommodate you," you got to come up with another solution. And that they are scrambling basically on the day before the tournament to do that is kind of surprising. So hopefully that's not anything that portends poorly for or kind of indicates this is going to be an ugly year. Hopefully we get some good golf. We've got that tournament. We've got the Amex. We've got the Abu Dhabi HSBC. We've got the champions in Hualalai. Right now they're finishing on the Korn Ferry Tour in the Bahamas, and they're starting again over the weekend with another tournament. So we've got a lot of golf. It's fully back at least this week, and then we'll see some breaks. But it's really good to have golf kind of fully back in swing. All right, that's going to do it for us today on Two at the First. Thank you so much for watching or listening to the show. If you connect with us through YouTube or video service, please smash the thumbs up, give us a like, give us a follow. We appreciate that. If you're listening through a podcast service and you'd be so kind as to subscribe to the show, give us a 5-star review on iTunes or similar service, we would also greatly appreciate that. You can check out all of our content at golfnewsnet.com or on GNN Radio, available on iHeartRadio. I've been Ryan Ballingy saying thank you for watching or listening, and we will talk to you next time on Two of the First.